Welcome back, everybody, to a very special episode of Seaweed Brain, a Percy Jackson podcast, because today Carter and I are joined by none other than Aryan Simhadri, who plays Grover on Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Spoilers through season 1, episode 7 of the TV show. Stick around.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's up?
Hi, Aryan. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
We're good.
I love your collection. Is that the UK cover of Chalice of the Gods?
It is. My friend brought it back from London.
That's the one thing I wish I got when I was there, because I love that cover so much.
Oh, God. It's really pretty, and it's got these, like, side, you know, whoa, the painting.
That's
painting
yeah.
Right?
It's pretty cool.
We're just so happy to talk to you, because I know we mentioned this when we met at the Met 1 million years ago, but Grover, we were like so like middling on Grover growing up. Like Grover wasn't our favorite character, but then seeing you step into this part completely changed that for us. And we are now total Grover stans. And even reading Chalice of the Gods, like we felt like your voice was so injected into the character. And we were wondering if you had a chance to read Chalice of the Gods yet, if it felt like reading a script to you.
I read it. Rick sent us like an early copy, and this is like kind of a side tangent, but just like seeing the dedication to us is like freaks me out every time. I actually just reread Chalice of the Gods, because like after we finished the press tour, and I don't know, I just wanted to give it another read. And yeah, I didn't realize how much, I guess, the writing from the show kind of bled into this new book. It definitely felt a lot more like, I feel like I could see myself as that character, like, you know, 10 years down the line or whatever.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Our favorite scene in Chalice of the Gods is when Percy is imagining his future and growing old together.
And yeah, Grover's and Grover, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the bench outside of Percy and Annabeth's house.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Okay, Carter, do you want to ask about that cut scene?
Yes. There was like a lot of rumblings in the early days, I think, I feel, of the press tour before the show had come out about the Council of Cloven Elders scene. And we really wanted to ask you if you had anything else you could share about what was filmed.
Absolutely. I don't think I can't say anything about that. Yeah, it was this beautiful set. It was, I think, one of my favorite days of filming. Walker and Leah weren't there. I think Walker stopped by just to see kind of what was happening. And I think later that day we might have filmed Leah's first scene. But yeah, it was just me that day. And it was like really like fresh into filming, like episode 2. And they built this like gorgeous set for us. Like this, it was this tunnel coming out into the volume stage. And it was like adorned with these like 3 huge chairs and like a fire pit that was kind of glowing. And there was like a bunch of platforms that were built really high up where like a bunch of satyrs were dancing and like playing panpipes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was wicked. And the entire scene, I'm the only one talking, and I'm talking to the 3 big, like, you know, Council of Cloven Elders, and they're bleeding at me. Exactly. It's that. They were like so good at it. By the end of the day, I could tell what their lines like meant. Like, oh, he's bleeding this. Like, this is the intention behind it. Mm-hmm. I could tell. I could tell, like, which word was, like, what bleat or whatever. Yeah, it was really cool to see people who, like, looked like me. You know, they had the mocap and, like, the ears and the horns on. Yeah. I went into the makeup trailer when they were getting all their stuff on. And just seeing, like, their massive horns, like, on these headbands. Mm-hmm. It was cool. It's, like, like, what I'll be doing in, like, you know, 7-8 years now.
Representation matters, you know?
Exactly.
One of the questions that we like to ask our guests way back on the first season of our podcast, when we were going through the original 5 books, was, would you join Luke in taking down civilization? And so my question for you is, what would it take for Grover to join Luke on the Princess Andromeda? Like, what would have to happen? What would Luke have to offer to get you to get on that boat?
That's a good question. I think if it was Percy or Annabeth, like, being held hostage, or if they crossed over, I think Grover would go unwillingly to get them to come back. Yeah, I just can't see him being a permanent resident among, I can't see him contributing to Kronos coming back in any way. Because I think the more that I think, this is the idea that I toyed with, just kind of like when I was reading the books before the filming. Kronos kind of, I guess, destroying New York or destroying, whatever the Western civilization, it would give the natural world a chance to kind of creep back in. Because, I think Grover's very against some of the like abhorrent things that we've done to, again,
The
like the
natural
natural.
world.
Yeah, I think if Luke played his cards right, he could kind of frame it in that way, but unless Pan was with their cause, there's no way that Grover would, see fit to like rebuilding Kronos, you know?
He's so peaceful. He's so
Yeah, he's
anti-violence.
exactly. I don't think he could ever justify like wiping out the Greek pantheon.
He sees too much value in everything inherently. He's so pure.
He's so pure. I think he understands that they're bad people, but I think he also guess that they are kind of what's kind of holding everything together.
And he's so optimistic. Like he
Yeah,
believes
he can
in
change.
generative justice and everything like that. They can change. Carter, will you ask Ariane our other question?
Yeah, the other question that we like to ask people on this podcast is if you feel that Persebeth is the greatest love story ever told, and if not, what your thoughts are on the greatest love story ever told.
Wow. Of all time?
Like of all time ever.
Oh my God. What an insane question. It's definitely up there. I will say, I just watched Notting Hill with my parents for the first time. And
Oh my gosh.
interesting. I'm not a
Classic.
big rom-com guy, but that and La La Land are two of my favorite movies of all time. Those are pretty fantastic love stories. But I think Persebeth is definitely up there for, because it's also a reflection of like Rick and Becky's real life story. Sweet. And it's also like the perfect, I guess, like enemies to lover. That's a, I don't know if that's the right term for it, but yeah, there's just so much development. Like, I don't think I've ever seen any other series or film like compact that much growth between, and I guess because, it gets the freedom of being a book series, so it gets that time to kind of play around with it. It's just such a natural, easy development. In the first book, they're so antagonistic towards each other. And I just reread the second book, and at the end, the chariot races, they definitely get a lot closer. And then they share a very sweet moment. I don't know. It's just such a beautiful story. So it's definitely up there for me.
Definitely up there. I totally thought you were gonna mention Orpheus and Eurydice.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm so sorry. That was what I wanted to say, and then I started thinking about Notting Hill, and then I started thinking about Lala. I'm so sorry.
No, it's sad though. Like that's a sad love story.
It is
It's a
sad.
sad song.
That is my favorite Greek myth. Hadestown is my favorite. I have like clear vinyl right there. It's just such a beautiful, also because so many ways you can tell it. And I'm also reading Song of Achilles right now.
Okay,
Oh,
Madeline
Achilles and
Miller.
Patroclus is a pretty intense, very Orpheus and Eurydice, like adjacent. It's a very
Yeah.
story.
Selena and Clarice, after all.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Hadestown, I feel like you mentioned to us that you had a dream role in Hadestown. And we were wondering if you'd like to pitch yourself to play your dream role in Hadestown.
I think I'd be a pretty fantastic Hermes. I'll
Period.
take anybody, honestly. I'll take Hades or Orpheus. But I think the reason why I'm so drawn to Hermes is because of how well André de Shields portrayed him. I was working on in New York for like a different project, and it was like a kind of Broadway kind of thing.
Trevor?
Yeah, it was Trevor. And I started listening to a bunch of like musical soundtracks just because everyone was always talking about them on set. And I wasn't a huge musical guy beforehand. And I stumbled on Hadestown, and just I never got to see him live because when I saw him, there was an understudy and who did just a good job. But just his voice and his like charisma and his like charm. I don't know. I feel like that's where I want to get to in my career, where I just have that kind of ego on stage. And so that's something that that performance is something I look up to.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's beautiful. We've been saying a lot as we talk about the episodes on our show that, like, the camera loves Aryan. And so I feel like that, like, you have that gravitational pull in you 100%.
Thank you. It's very sweet.
Talking about musicals.
Yeah.
We asked around. We were like, does anybody have questions? I absolutely have to ask Aryan. And everybody was like, please talk about the Lightning Thief musical.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, a favorite song or, like, a moment from the musical? I know I have a moment that I want to ask you about. Grover.
There's, you know that song where it's, like, interrupted halfway and he's, like, talking to the squirrel, I think?
Yes.
Also, sorry, this is, again, very off topic. George Salazar DM'd me and he was like, that was my reaction. And he was like, I love what you guys are doing with the show. Oh, you're killing it. Keep killing it. And wow. I was like, God, I'm such a big fan of the musical.
Yeah.
Also Be More Chill, which.
What a legend. Yeah. George Salazar. Yeah.
Michael in the Bathroom. Period. Such a legendary song. But you know the bit where in the show where he's like, I said hi to the squirrel. You're going to have to say hi to the squirrel too, Percy. And both Annabeth and Grover are like, say hi to the squirrel, Percy. That was one of my favorite bits from the thing. It's also in, I think, I could be getting this wrong, but I think it's in the middle of one of my favorite songs where it's like, just keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, drive?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just drive. Yeah.
Yeah. That entire sequence is so, like, that's just so representative of Grover. That's like a perfect thing.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that you've made contact with George Salazar, because it is my current dream to get you and George Salazar and Jarell, who's our friend who played Grover after George,
to do
a Tree on the Hill cover.
That'd be awesome.
Which is the saddest song I've ever heard.
That would be wicked. I'd be
okay. Coming back to Grover and Percy's relationship, because, you know, we asked you about Percibeth. We believe, you know, Percibeth is great. The way that the partnership has strengths and weaknesses that complement each other. But what do you think are the strengths and weaknesses that complement each other in Percy and Grover's relationship?
Yeah, I think their romance is just as it burns just as brightly as Percibeth's. You know,
absolutely, speak on it.
Yeah, especially when we were filming, just that like month we got at Yancey Academy, which is also kind of what they use in the books to kind of establish their relationship right off the bat. Mm-hmm. That was so helpful to kind of develop like all that more, just an even more natural chemistry between me and Walker. Because I think after that section in the books and the show, they kind of hop right into their quest. And if they don't have that chemistry when they're on their quest, then it's kind of hard for them to get it afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think at Yancey Academy, there's also a bunch of like little details that I'm so glad were written into the show, like him not wanting Percy to stand up to anybody. They were playing mythomagic. And
yeah.
There's actually a whole sequence where we filmed just an improv sequence where I'm kind of like playing the dungeon master. And we just spent like a day
no
on this.
Way.
And I have his journal. I think I got to keep his mythomagic journal with all the drawings in it.
Yeah.
Segment where it's like a whole quest written into the book. And so I just kind of read Walker through that, and I would, you know, make up new stories every time. And it was really cool.
Wow.
And I think just the fact that we got to do that made the rest of the show so much easier.
Yeah,
I think their chemistry is incredible. Grover kind of keeps the quest together when Percy and Annabeth are kind of bickering in that first scene.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's kind of the soul of the group.
Yeah. We thought it was so special to see Grover and Percy kind of end the quest together after the decision for Annabeth to leave, and it was the two of them in the underworld alone.
Oh, yeah. You guys saw episodes.
Yeah, we've seen through the end. I should have prefaced with that.
I haven't actually seen episodes 7 and 8. I saw like the Luke fight and the Ares fight because me and Walker wanted to see those. And we begged Dan to show us. I haven't seen like the full episode 7 and 8. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm honestly really, I really like episode 7 is one of my favorites. I really like that change that one of the pearls gets lost and Annabeth has to use hers to get out. Because it just makes that decision all the more heart-wrenching. Like they could have had the chance to save his mom and they just couldn't cut it right away.
Oh, wow. We have one last question for you, which is that if Aryan could say anything to Grover, what would it be?
Like book 5 Grover? Like Chalice of the Gods Grover?
You can choose. You can choose. At what point in his journey you want to speak to him at?
Oh, man. I think I would talk to book 5 Grover. Because like right after he inherits that like title of Lord of the Wild. Because he's like going through it in that book. He is, like no one believes him, and there's and Cronus is like messing everything up for him and like a bunch of like satyrs and like tree nymphs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just tell him like it gets better. I'd probably tell him about like Percy's vision, like you were talking about, of like all of them growing old together. Because Grover, like, you know, you kind of forget it when they're fighting Hyperion, but he's having kind of a rough time, especially in book four.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I just tell him, I just kind of like tell him about Percy's kind of struggle with Garrus and like his like vision, I guess.
Yeah,
wow.
Or I'd like ask him for recipes because he's kind of killed in the kitchen and the house of the gods.
You need that enchiladas recipe.
I need that. I need to know where he gets his strawberries and where he and like his spaghetti and enchilada recipes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, wow. Perfect answer. Of course. Thank you for joining us, Aryan. It's so great to talk to you.
Of course, thank you so much. That was a great interview.
We're so proud of you, and we appreciate you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the fantastic questions.
Thank you, listeners, for being here, and make sure that you are following Seaweed Brain wherever you're listening and on social media so you can stay up to date for more episodes and more special guests to come.
Thank you guys so much. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.